Welcome to Movie Maniacs. Mike Rags and Chuck Curry discussing the greatest movies of all time and all the new films in theaters and streaming that you need to know about. Like us, rate us, share us. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
We are back with another edition of Movie Maniacs, the podcast. Mike Rags with Chuck Curry and the show, if you're listening on Mobile 1190 and 107.5 FM. We got an abbreviated podcast. We got some movie news to get to and some Fast Five with birthdays and all that kind of fun stuff. But it is an honorable this day in movie history, Chuck, as we bring in you here. 40 years ago, a lot of camp counselors were starting to get hacked up. And can you believe it? 1980 on this date, back 40 years ago, not Jason, Jason's mother, spoiler alert, was killing people. Good. I mean, explain, and we'll do it in the back half. If you're listening on the radio station, that'll be the second half of the show. Chuck and I did a Friday the 13th retrospective going through all the films, and you'll get to hear that if you're listening on the radio. But if you're just listening to the podcast, Chuck, thoughts about that? I mean, a lot of people give credit to the slasher film, to Halloween. I would argue that this film was as important, if not more important than Halloween, to get that genre started.
No, it was the pinnacle of importance in terms of the pure slasher film. What was interesting, if you go back to 1978, John Carpenter's Halloween, at the time became the largest, most successful independent film at that time ever produced. He shot that film for A Song and a Dance, like I think like $350,000. Movie wound up grossing over time worldwide over 100 million. But if you look at Halloween in its purity, it's not really a slasher film. It's a suspense film. And then Sean S. Cunningham, producer, did the Friday 13th film in 1980. And that is a pure slasher film. And that had a lot of influence going forward, as Halloween 2, which came out 1 year later, was produced ultimately or recut as a pure slasher film. I remember sitting in a theater. My friend's brother took us to see Friday 13th when I was a very little boy in 1980. I was young. and I got to tell you, a movie scared the living daylights out of me because I never seen such screen violence like that. And that scene where Kevin Bacon's character is laying on the bed and the knife comes through his throat, I got to tell you, it's pretty shocking and disturbing stuff. And they said to this day, if that movie was released in its form, that scene, it would be more than an R, would have got an NC-17 rating today. That's how graphic that scene was.
You know, and it came out on May the 9th, 1980, $550,000 budget. It made $60 million. And you wonder why they kept making these movies. There's your equation. Low budget, high rewards.
Sure. And as we say on our overall synopsis of the entire franchise, people pack theaters opening weekends for those Friday 13th movies. I remember going to every single one of them, and they felt like maybe not the event of an Avenger movie, but an event. People showed up, Mike, and the theaters were packed for those
movies. Especially teenagers. It was big for teenagers on Friday nights. That would be the movie they would go see with their friends, and just enjoy the screams and the formula. There is definitely a formula in play here that it was established in the beginning. A lot of teenagers, they have sex. The ones that have sex get killed. The ones that don't end up surviving, especially the last girl. And it almost it started a subgenre of last girl films of who would be the one to survive. Very few times, Chuck, a man would survive through the entire Friday the 13th movie, except Jason,
very true,
of course.
Very, very true. But that is a premier trivia question. Who is the killer in the original Friday the 13th? It is not Jason. It's Jason's mother.
It is Jason's mother for sure, and a good twist and a great ending. We'll go through it later on. Betsy Palmer, of course, playing Mrs.
Yes.
Voorhees. We'll talk about it later on. If you're listening on the radio, if not, we'll go back and when we're done with the podcast and just watch all the movies, Chuck. So yeah, it's hard to believe it's been 40 years for Friday the 13th. I guess my question to you before we get into some movie news here: could a movie we've seen the disaster movie genre come back? Can a slasher movie genre come back? I mean, they've tried it a little bit, but mostly it's been reboots and just poor attempts. Do you think that's the kind of film that can come back in this day and age?
Well, there is some movie news that I read that Neve Campbell is reportedly in some sort of early negotiations to come back in a fifth Scream film. Now, Wes Craven passed away last year. He, the creator of the original Scream, and directed all four of those films. He will not be involved, obviously, because he passed. But I guess you could call Scream a very well done, well thought out slasher franchise, but a good one. I listen, in some form, yeah, why not?
Yeah, I guess some might argue Saw is that. I mean, but did they just take the violence and the gothness to another level, a different level of?
I would categorize the Saw franchise, and many were really good films. If you like that sort of stuff, they equate that as what they call torture porn, right?
Yes.
And I think that's a pretty good analogy for that stuff.
All right, Chuck, let's get to some movie news. And you brought up the first one. I've got other sequel news as well.
Okay.
It's like Sylvester Stallone in talks to do a sequel to the cult comedy action movie Demolition Man, which starred Sandra Bullock and Wesley Snipes. A very enjoyable film from way back when. The question
27 years ago.
I mean, what are we doing here, Sly? I mean, are you just out of original ideas? And is it just time to just go away into the sunset? That movie
no, because he know, be, because he knows if you're going to go back to the well, it's easy to go with a name product.
Is it a name product though? That's my argument.
It's more so than an unnamed product.
Yeah. Right.
In his case, I think, listen, I still have my doubts if Warner Brothers is really going to finance a Demolition Man 2 with a real budget for Stallone now in his 70s. I have my doubt on that. Could he get Sandra Bullock back?
That's the coup. That's the one he'd have to get.
He'd have to get her. Yeah.
Or it's never going to see the – it'll be, he'll get David Bautista as his, co-star, and it'll be on streaming only if he doesn't get Sandra Bullock. So
I would agree.
How about a Children of the Corn remake being shot right now in Australia, Chuck? Of course, the original.
Can you get COVID in a cornfield? What's the story?
Malachi is back, and the Stephen King movie, the original, was back in 1984. It starred Linda
Hamilton. Yeah, Linda Hamilton.
Peter Horton, who was a 30-something, literally a 30-something actor, because he was on the show.
And they made a whole bunch of direct-to-DVD sequels, if you remember.
Yes, they did. Now, the original is kind of creepy, and it works on a certain level. It's more of a B movie than any of
it's anything. Definitely a B movie. It's not recognizing the canon of the best of the Stephen King, but it's not the worst either.
No, but is it worthy of a reboot? I guess that's the real question.
I don't see it as a theatrical reboot, if you're asking me that. Probably more of a streaming reboot.
Oh, even you are saying things should just go right to stream. Chuck, did you see the new logo and the reveal of Space Jam 2? With LeBron James.
I did.
Yeah. What thoughts on the new Space Jam, A New Legacy, it's called?
It certainly has the potential for a high profile, high interest film, no doubt.
I just don't know how many kids are watching Warner Brother cartoons anymore.
I think they'll re-energize it. I think it works. I think it's a good idea.
Well, I will tell you, my daughter and I just watched the original a couple of weeks ago with Michael Jordan, and she did enjoy it, highly enjoyed it. I was actually surprised how much she enjoyed it, considering the animation is, not on par with today's standards. But she did get a kick out of it, and boy, oh boy, if you're not watching The Last Dance, Chuck, on ESPN, you are missing out. That is something else. Not since they did the O.J. Simpson 10-part series. ESPN has just knocked it out of the park with this Last Dance, and it's quite revealing. At times.
I've watched bits and pieces of it, and I got to tell you, they do really good. They do that type of programming. They're on top of their game, and they need that because there's no sports. There's no sports to televise.
Yeah,
I think they're doing repeats of 1983 softball games now. I mean, it's they've really gone to the well.
And the scary thing is, I'd probably watch it for sure.
I got one bit of news here. Kara Gillian, who is the female lead in the last two Jumanji films, mm-hmm. reportedly of high interest to Disney as a possible female lead in their Pirates of the Caribbean reboot. Now, they won't speculate whether Johnny Depp will have any involvement or not. Probably not, but who knows? They might shoehorn him in, but they're looking to cast as the lead a female actress, and they're looking at her pretty seriously from what I hear.
Yeah, the problem I have is the last one, even with Johnny Depp, was overblown budget. Not many people were really clamoring to go see it in the theaters anymore, Chuck.
Well, you know, it's interesting. What's interesting about this franchise is the original film was very entertaining, and it was not bloated. It was a ton of fun to watch Johnny Depp as Captain Jack Sparrow. And I thought the other two sequels to that first film were a little over 3 hours long.
Yeah,
they had no business being over an hour and 10 minutes, and it was just so bloated. Yeah, they had some entertainment value, but just to me, way too long. And then the last two, I mean, they're watchable films, no doubt, but it just feels like been there, done that, and you just went to the bottom of the well a little too much. Having said that, it is a really fun character, yeah. But it appears Disney. But here's the thing, those movies, all of them, either made over $1 billion or close to $1 billion, even if the last one didn't do that well here in the States. Overseas, it did very well. So there is a lot of viability in the franchise as a whole, both from the theatrical point of view to the streaming point of view to the theme park point of view. So I get why Disney still has an interest in this franchise.
And if you're a fan of Disney's The Mandalorian, like I am, a lot of buzz this last week about season two being put together. And it looks like the actor who played Boba Fett, Temuera Morrison, is going to come back to play Boba Fett. He actually played Jango Fett in the the second trilogy. He's going to play Boba Fett, which gives a little bit of a reveal of the timeline of The Mandalorian, Chuck. And I'm a big fan of the series. I don't know if you've watched it yet. I don't think you have Disney Plus, but I would highly recommend. By the way, Disney Plus in 54 million homes now, Chuck, and that's a lot of homes. Not yours, though.
Not mine. It's a lot. I have actually in my smoothie shop, I have Disney Plus.
Oh, there you go.
No, I've watched a lot of Disney Plus stuff.
I like it. Does it put you in a good mood? It should.
Yeah. Oh, I actually, good. There's been days in my smoothie shop where I watch Tim Burton's Dumbo on an endless loop on Disney Plus. So just want to give that a plug.
All the Disney movies you're going to put on, of course, that's the one.
Why not?
And Stephen King's revival is going to get made by the guy who directed Dr. Sleep, which I enjoyed, the Boone McGregor movie sequel to The Shining. Revival is being done right now. It's about an evangelist and a relationship with a kid, Chuck. So Stephen King. I'll tell you what, it's amazing how much product you can get from Stephen King.
Yeah, no doubt. I guess, listen, he's got a lot of source material. The It movies were really popular, and that name has recognition, so they go to the well. I'd like to see, you know, my favorite, we've done Stephen King on this podcast more than a few times. I still, if you had to pick one, to me, it's always been The Dead Zone with Chris Walken. I just am fascinated by that film. David Cronenberg directed it. It's very different than the source material, the novel of Stephen King, but the concept is there, and I just love that movie.
And of course, Chuck is talking about the Anthony Michael Hall series.
No, I mean that movie has that series is very interesting, and it's actually fairly well done. But the 83 film with Chris Walken, Martin Sheen, to me, is a classic movie.
It is a great, great, great movie, no doubt about it. All right, Chuck, let's do Fast Five before we check out of here. And then on the back end of things, if you're listening on WoWo 1190 and 107.5 FM, you're going to get our retrospection of Friday the 13th, the series, as it was released, the first one, 40 years ago. All right, Chuck, we're going to start difficult here. And then get a little easier. Let's start with Ving Rhames. Ving Rhames is going to be, boy, oh boy, 61 years old. He looks great.
Is he going to be 61? Holy smoke.
Yeah, 61 years old. And, of course, I guess the one that pops up easily is Pulp Fiction as Marcellus Wallace. But I really like his turn as Luther in the Mission Impossible movies.
Ving Rhames you're talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about Ving Rhames.
I thought you were talking about Vin Diesel for a second. I was like, wow, he looks really good for 61. You want to know something? I absolutely love Ving Rhames in Zack Snyder's 2004 yeah. Dawn of the Dead. Yeah. That is, talk about a movie that was unbelievably well cast. Ving Rhames, Sarah Polley, Jake Weber,
and Mickey
Pfeiffer. I mean, that and I love that film. As much as I love the original Dawn of the Dead, it's one of my all time top 10 favorite movies of all time, George Romero's film from 1978. But I gotta tell you, that reboot is one of the best reboots of all time.
I just made reference to another reboot that he's great in Piranha. He's really good in that. With Adam Scott and Elizabeth Shue, great casting in that movie, Piranha. He would actually pop up in the sequel somehow. I don't know how he survived that, Chuck. I did like Ving Rhames. Did you ever watch his Kojak?
I did. It was fun in that. That was a good role for him.
Interesting career. Never made the stardom of his brother, Charlie Sheen, but Emilio Estevez is 58 years old this weekend, Chuck. He's had a weird career, obviously a teen star, and then the Mighty Ducks movies, and then he's turned into a director and went behind the camera.
Yeah.
But when you hear Emilio Estevez, is it Gordon Bombay and Gordon Bombay alone, or do you go back to his early stuff in like St. Elmo's Fire?
Yeah, I'll go with St. Elmo's Fire. I like that. It's a really good ensemble film directed by Joel Schumacher. Brat Pack casting through and through. That one scene with Andy McDowell toward the yeah. end is very – it's a nice scene. I like that film.
I do like his character in that movie more than pretty much any other character. But The Breakfast Club, too, he's very good in that movie.
And let's be honest. They don't make movies like St. Elmo's Fire anymore. It's a different time and a different place, and attention span was different, and star power was – it's just a different world.
But let's say this.
Yeah.
There is a place for the Mighty Ducks movies, I will say. They are very watchable movies, even though he went probably to the well one too many times. I do enjoy the Mighty Ducks movies, and – I will say, don't forget, he's in the original Mission Impossible, too. He goes uncredited in that film. He's one of the original. He's good in that. He dies early, unfortunately. And I do like his two turns with Richard Dreyfuss in the Stakeout movies. I thought they were, those funny cop movies.
Yeah, they were. And the first chemistry one, the first one, first Stakeout was a big hit.
Yeah, it was good
that
stuff.
That was a big hit. That was a touch Disney touchstone, if you remember.
We could go to Pulp Fiction once again here, Chuck. Harvey Keitel is 81. Wow. He's been around a long time. He's done a lot of great characters.
You want an insane Harvey Keitel film? It was Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah. Yeah. That is an unbelievable movie to watch. And amazing that it got released.
But he's a pretty nasty villain in Taxi Driver.
He is. He's very good in that. He's very good in Pulp Fiction. Let's face it. When he shows up at the tail end of that movie as the mm-hmm. cleaner, he is hysterical in that movie. And Reservoir Dogs, he's really good. Obviously, he's done a lot of great work. And he's even good in the Irishman that came out last year. I thought he was good.
Yeah.
Up in that. So he 81. And still going strong. Still working. Here's a tough one, Chuck. And I don't even know if we can come up with one. But she fascinates me on screen, even though she's never really made it too big. And that's Rosario Dawson, who will turn 41 this weekend, and I kind of remember her way back. Remember she was in that. Remember the movie Kids that came out in 1995, that controversial film about kids in New York City. She was one of that ensemble cast, and then I remember her popping up in Josie and the Pussycats. But I guess the first time I remember her is Men in Black 2, and I'm like, boy, she's got screen presence. There's a different look and feel to her, but she just hasn't found her niche per se on the big screen.
What about Hitch?
Yeah, she's good in that, and she's also good in the Unstoppable. Remember,
she's good in everything. She's tremendously likable on film.
But yet, when you bring her up and I ask you to name a movie, uh-huh. it's hard to just pick to like that one doesn't pop up.
Maybe.
And she popped up in The Mandalorian as well, so she's good in that first season. Last but not least, and I guess we could have done a whole show on him, although his big screen prowess has kind of waned a little bit. George Clooney, 59 years old this week, Chuck. Very likable actor. I think that's the best way to put it. A movie star, one of the few that are It's ironic. He's a movie star, Chuck, but he can't open a movie. His movies that just star him tend to fail. Even Tomorrowland, a big Disney movie that came out that they were expecting big things from, kind of was flat and didn't make much at the box office. When I say George Clooney, is it Danny Ocean and Danny Ocean alone?
To me, honestly, it's Doug Ross in ER. I still feel the best work Clooney for me has ever done is on ER, which had a very long run on NBC.
Yeah, I love it.
It ran from 94 to 2009. He left before the show ended, like a lot of the cast of that show. One of my all-time favorite TV shows. But The Perfect Storm, I'm a big fan of that film. It comes on all the time on AMC and TNT. And, you know, you turn the channel, hey, Perfect Storm is on. It's one of those movies that has tremendous rewatch ability. From Dusk Till Dawn, before he became, a big name, directed by Robert Rodriguez, written by Quentin Tarantino, plays sort of an anti-hero in that film. He has a great look in that. That's a really interesting movie. Another one of a type film that, if you like that genre, very, very rewatchable. Did The Descendants. Solaris was a bomb, but I find that movie a very interesting remake. And he's good in it. Here's what's interesting about Clooney. And Up in the Air is a good movie.
Great movie. I do not like
his Coen Brothers stuff. I know people do. I just don't want to see him in the goofy stuff. I look at Clooney, and I say to myself, here's a guy I think it would have been pretty cool if he followed more of a Charlton Heston-type career, where if he did more sci-fi and a little bit more like disaster. I could have easily envisioned him in the remake of Planet of the Apes instead of Mark Wahlberg and instead of Tim Burton as the director. You have James Cameron as the director. You have George Clooney as the star, and that he would have been the right star for that material. Or I would see Clooney in like a remake of Soylent Green or Earthquake. That's what I wanted Clooney to do besides the stuff that he liked or enjoyed doing. There's more to him, I think, in movies than what he's done. Am I wrong?
I agree. And, I think probably he became such a big movie star, he didn't need to make those movies. And I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
I loved him in Up in the Air. I thought that was one of his best movies. And I thought Gravity, he was fantastic in. As a co-star for Sandra Bullock. And he's done some great work with Descendants. I mean, he's done a lot of great work, but recently the only big movie he did was back in 2016, and you can call it as big as you want, but co-starring with, if you had George Clooney and Julia Roberts in a movie and you think it'd be a but even her star kind of faded on the big screen. Money Monster, it was an interesting watch, but hardly.
I thought when I watched Money Monster, the concept's really interesting, but that movie stretches plausibility like a rubber band that's really being pretty expanded. There were times I sat there going, "Oh boy, like this the rubber band's going to break here." It's becoming pretty silly, but I do like him. I actually do like him.
Even in his light stuff in One Fine Day back in the day with Michelle Pfeiffer, right. Very good. And Out of Sight, obviously, pairing with J-Lo. That was a great movie. Let's face it, though, he's Danny Ocean. Chuck, the three Oceans movies are really done well. The second one, but he's really Danny Ocean.
You didn't mention his Bruce Wayne Batman.
We're trying to forget that, Chuck.
No, well, what happened is, for people who don't know, when he was doing ER, he had a contract with Warner Brothers. They were going to try to launch him into movie stardom. And then Val Kilmer, they did not want Val Kilmer back. He didn't want to come back after Batman Forever. A lot of on-set problems with his personality. And they had Clooney ready in the fold to make a movie star off ER. And they said, hey, Clooney, you're under contract. We're going to make you Bruce Wayne Batman. It's not like he lobbied for the role. And not that there's nothing wrong with him as Bruce Wayne Batman. It's more of
a movie around him.
It's a script, and the direction is juvenile. And that's a podcast for another day. But, Schumacher has stated that, he did that tone the way Warner Brothers wanted. They basically wanted a movie like the original Batman series in tone, silly for kids. Yeah. So it wasn't Clooney's fault that movie is, not made for anybody over 12. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
And it's wildly, and I mean wildly, Mike, overproduced.
Way overscored, way over everything.
I mean, you talk about a movie when they define what is overproduced. I mean, that movie's overproduced.
It's a little crazy. Yeah. All right, well, we're underproduced. We're only doing just a podcast right here, but we'll come back if you're listening on the radio to talk about the Friday the 13th franchise, Chuck.
I do got one other thing.
What do you got?
This week in history, okay?
In world history or movie history?
In movie history.
Okay.
But you could veer into history too.
Okay.
In 1962,
oh, wow.
The movie soundtrack of West Side Story was released, right?
Yeah, fantastic.
It instantaneously became number one on the charts. But here's the kicker. It lasted number one, Mike, for 54 consecutive weeks.
Wow.
More than that's 20 weeks more than any other movie soundtrack. That'll never be beaten. 54 weeks. What a great soundtrack. What a great film. We talk about West Side Story. What an awesome movie. Great music.
Did you see the mug I'm using today in honor of our show?
I like that. Jason Voorhees mask.
Jason
I like
Voorhees,
that.
Yeah, it's a little
you like hockey, huh? You like hockey?
No, I like Friday the 13th, which I might go and watch the original
when
this is all said and done. All right, Chuck. We'll do this again next week. All right, pal?
Always a pleasure, Mike. And I just want to point out, we got some fan mail this week. If Deb is listening to this podcast radio show, thank you for your listenership and your kind words.
And keep them coming, people. That's for sure. All right. We'll talk next week, my friend.
Thank you.
This has been a presentation of Opt-In Productions. Thanks for listening to Movie Maniacs. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Download one of our archived episodes or listen to our next new podcast Friday. Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.